Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome to the Thinker Girls Pod Channel. I'm Stacey June.
And I'm Christy Mercer. Hello.
Hello.
Hey to you.
You fool. I love you.
What song's that?
Come Ride the Joy Ride.
Is that a Carly song?
No, that's Roxette.
Is it?
Hello. This is where all different shows drop each and every day almost of this pod channel. But today's podcast is an interview with Ray Morris.
That is correct. We knew that it was going to go all over the shop because Ray's brain, when we chatted to him before, is just like one of those splatter paintings that were cool in the 2000s.
No, splatter paint, but the most beautiful, inquisitive, I don't know, splatter painting you've ever seen.
That's what I mean, in the sense that there is no sense of direction or knowing where it could possibly go, because she's so incredibly curious and creative, and you can almost see her as she's talking going, off on these offshoots. She goes, anyway, what were you saying? And you forget what you were saying previously, because where she goes is so much more interesting.
But the interesting thing about her is, and I can relate to this, is she follows herself. Do you know what I mean? So a few times in the interview, she would spiral back and remember where it originally came from.
That's right. And we're like, oh yeah, I forgot we're talking about that.
Which is the true testament of a genius, if you ask me. Did I just call myself a genius? Maybe.
Did you?
Yeah, cool. Well, I said I related to it.
Yeah, right.
And then I called her a genius, and then it was like by default I'd call myself. That's not what I meant.
Regardless.
But yeah, Ray Morris, we asked her to film a makeup video for us when we were doing the Kiss show, and word got back to us that she was an incredibly big fan of the show. Mm-hmm. So we were quite flattered because we were big fans of hers, and I had had her books for years sitting in my lounge room, which we did show her, which was quite a nice moment. But Ray's been around for a very long time. She's one of the most influential makeup artists in the world. She has done some incredible stuff with her branding and her business, not to mention the brushes and the brushes that she sourced, which are world first, that she goes into detail, which I, to be honest, I didn't know anything about.
Mm.
You know, she goes into really big detail about how she's a craftsman. Like, she has this idea of incredible and impeccable quality when it comes to the utensils?
Mm-hmm.
Tools she uses.
Yeah. She is incredibly passionate about what she does. She's an artist.
Mm, she
when
is.
When you yeah, when you say, oh, they're a makeup artist, like underline that word, because she is an artist in a lot of ways. This was a really cool chat. It was very hard to edit because we just frothed every moment of
yeah,
it, essentially,
we did.
And we just banged on for ages.
We did. So let her know that you heard us here, or let us know if you enjoyed it. If you are following us on socials, you will see we have announced a live tour. We are traveling the country in December. We are going to Adelaide on the Friday, the 7th of December, Melbourne, Saturday, 8th of December, Brisbane, Friday, the 14th of December, and Sydney, Saturday, the 15th of December. Tickets will go on sale October 22nd.
We can't wait to see your mugs there. If, I don't know, there's some places there that we haven't actually done live shows before.
No.
So we're really, really excited to get there. And tag your mates in the post that we've chucked up online.
Well, we thought it was a kind of cute idea to do Christmas drinks or have some form of, you know, dinner before or have a bit of a catch-up. But Adelaide and Brisbane, we have no idea how many of you there are. So we really would appreciate for you to spread the word, bring a group of pals and make it, you know, the night that we've had in all other cities of the country.
Can't wait.
This is Ray Morris. Hope you enjoy it, guys. Ray Morris, welcome to the Thinker Girls Pod Channel.
Thanks for having me. It's very exciting.
We're really glad you're here.
I'm so glad to be here because I love you girls.
And you came bringing coffee as well.
I know, right?
That's when you know someone loves you. The first time that I ever heard or saw your name was on a coffee table book in Stacey's house.
Oh, really?
Yeah. years ago.
Oh, wow. Oh.
And it's still in my lounge room. We'll get your photo. We'll get a photo with you before.
The one with Catherine McNeil?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Wow. Ray Morris makeup, yeah. I think. Wow. Yeah.
Your book would be sitting on so many coffee tables. Yeah. Like you're speaking in terms of longevity in the industry. Yeah. It just made me think to ask you that. You know, sometimes you don't have much of a concept.
I don't have much. And yeah. Even that book too, I think it was not the easy experience. And also, I was never proud of that book. I was proud of the literature and the writing. I read back on it and I would not change a thing. But with the images and not working with an editorial team, you're working with publishers, it's all like, I had like 10 days to shoot the whole thing. I didn't get to edit the shots I wanted to. When it first got printed, the skins looked really yellow and so the last, I've done five now, I can't remember, but the last one is the first one I self-published and did it. I had more control. So I do see that book everywhere and it still blows me away that it really appealed to so many people. Oh, I thought it would never sell. I thought, it won't sell.
Really? Yeah, and it did quite well, right?
It's still the highest ever beauty book ever to sell. It's won over 10. I've lost count on bestsellers. What's really the sad part, though, of bestsellers, though, you have to be in Australia, unless it's changed in the last week, you have to be sold within a bookstore. So if you sell now, if you're a new author and you sell on Amazon or Booktopia, those don't get counted.
So this is so interesting because I'm writing serious? A book.
Yes. And you could be a bestseller and not know about it.
And I'm going through this road of self-published versus published. Mm. And it is interesting because Australia's so backwards with a lot of the ways that we do things that totally. If you don't follow the man or work for the man, i.e. work for this place, work for that place with these big hats, and you try and do something for yourself or on your own.
It's really hard.
It's very difficult.
But is that just in Australia? Like, does that happen in the US and the UK
I'm assuming so, but I haven't really checked that out. But yeah, so we've got, like, we know we've sold, I mean, at least over 50,000 last time of that book to Amazon. Now, that would make it best.
And that's not counted. But that's not counted at all towards
you. Booktopia's not counted. Amazon's not counted. And the bookstore, like Borders, like there's not as many bookstores now.
No,
so
way less.
It's really,
that's got to change.
It has to. And I feel sorry for so many authors who are out there that are probably killing what the bestseller lists are in numbers but aren't getting the recognition. To self-publish, the last book that I did, now just to print, we printed 20,000 copies. Mm-hmm. The print run was $320,000. That's not the $40,000 we had to pay on top of that to stamp the Golden Boss. That's not
just,
the.
I just started to.
Stacey's just fallen on the floor. It's got to be okay, Dale.
The $60,000 to put the box.
I'll be plugging it like. Can I manage your singing gigs? I need a few extra jobs.
It is. People have, and then what I didn't, and the thing is, the last one was meant to be like as an iPad app, and it just sort of grew and grew and went to this crazy beast that got out of control. But it's the way I wanted it. But I remember Delta said, she said, well, that's what it costs to do an album. Because I said, people don't know how much that book cost, and that cost over $1 million to do. People don't have no, we're still paying it off.
That's not to mention the time that you had to take out of your daily life to write, which it might take a year full time, and that might be a quick
and that hasn't to write even, so it essentially hasn't, you haven't paid yourself a wage yet.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You're, a lot if you're of stepping people, away from actual work, which I think a lot of, well, we realize that this
don't do a book with photos. Don't do a book with photos and you're fine. Take the photographic and the models and the catering and all that out of it. You might have.
What was the first product or moment in your career where it turned from being a makeup artist to a business? In terms, when I say business, I mean a bigger brand.
It's funny because the brand thing, my husband says it to me, like, you're a brand. I'm like, what does that mean? Because in my head, I'm a makeup artist who loves doing editorial, that some things happen by accident and they're still here. So,
can you explain to our listener what you mean by editorial?
Okay, so interesting word, actually. A lot of up-and-coming makeup artists throw that word around, and a lot of editorial makeup artists, I personally don't, but we take a little bit of offense sometimes when everyone just calls themselves that. Mm-hmm. I call an editorial makeup artist someone, first of all, we're talking about fashion magazines here, mm-hmm. respected magazines, mm-hmm. like your Vogue, Jean Marie Claire's, Cosmo Claire's, all those.
Not women's, your blog.
Not, or the back pages at a big W catalog. Okay, we're talking about either the beauty editor or the fashion editor choosing you to creatively design and direct hair and makeup for that shoot. And why it's such a powerful thing, a lot of people don't know this, you don't really get paid in the editorial world. Like, I would probably get, if I did a shoot for Vogue, you get, I think, $260. You got to pay your agency. There's no money in editorial.
Really?
But what makes that amazing, you know that you're chosen for your creativeness. So, for example, say in my agency, I have, say, 10 makeup artists, and Vogue come knocking. They don't go, who's the cheapest? Who can I budget for? Who is the person I creatively want the most? So what So you're creatively directing the shoot. So when you see your work in a magazine, you know that it was your decision. Mm. And what makes it even more powerful is people who want to spend money on makeup artists like Sony or, you know, campaigns or fashion brands, they look mainly to the editorial artists for two reasons. One, they know that they eat, drink and breathe makeup. It's in their blood because they're doing it creatively without how much they're getting paid. And secondly, you get to really see who an artist is because you know they're not being completely controlled by what they do.
And we know that better than anyone because I think we would do fairly thrown together shoots back in the day, but we are very lucky to have had a very strong hair and makeup artist who is basically my sister and has grown with us and essentially always had her. So we didn't always have a budget, but we had Beth.
It makes such a difference.
And,
it makes a difference.
And you can find her on Instagram, Pepper Beth, because we owe her a million different plugs from all the years.
What's her name? Give it.
Pepper Beth.
Beth Haywood. And she's based in Melbourne and she grew with us and did a lot of things and still continues to do things for mates rates or for free.
Yeah.
And we,
I still do.
And we, because she believes in the product and believes in us, but we could have just pulled things from our wardrobe is what I'm trying to say. But it was her hair and makeup and her vision and her contribution that 100% took them from throw together shoots to professional shoots.
But why? You know? But why is it that editorial? There's no money in it. Like because you know that seems
to
be
money in print.
Well, that seems to be the place where you see most of an artist.
Yeah.
You're doing the most work.
It's interesting. It's like, it's like I remember being told that Miu Miu Prada never made money out of their clothes. They actually, a lot of houses run at a loss. I mean, they make the money from sunglasses and shoes. Mm. And sometimes the thing is, with the editorial work, you have to have complete creative control. So that means you can't have clients on there. You don't get budgeted to really shoot the editorial because no one's paying. Like if Louis Vuitton pay for that shoot, you'd have to guarantee Louis Vuitton has to be in that a certain way they want it to be seen. So basically how I look at it is it's that job that you get funded, if anything, your expenses get paid and you can do whatever you want. You get the most amazing model locations. But what editorial brings you is probably 10 times more money than you could ever dream of. So if the second a model does the cover of Australian Vogue or any Vogue, look what happens to her career. You know
and that's
what I mean?
Like us.
So
we, you know, we had a pod channel. We have the pod channel, but we have a podcast, which made no money but got us a radio show. You know, like it platforms you to different places.
When I used to do the shows, I used to watch the hair. I was always on the makeup teams, but the hair directors like Guido, and they used to use makeup brushes on hair. And I thought, I'm going to design one for Guido.
Mm.
And then, because I didn't have a business head, that's my problem. I actually don't have that. I just...
So these things
you're
stuff.
A creative.
These
things started to come to you from
a different place.
Yeah, so I made this hairbrush and I thought, hang on, this is an editorial hairbrush to flatten wigs and they're so expensive to make. No one's really going to buy this. So I put it in my hair kit and just forgot about it. And I remember doing Jen Hawkins for something and I pulled it out because my makeup kit hadn't arrived. And I better start and I pulled that brush out and straight away she said, oh, that's amazing. And I went, oh, okay.
So what did it do?
It's a big, my radiance, the foundation brush. Uh-huh. And I saw, Guido, he orders them still to this day. So they're a brush, like when you're putting wigs or ponytails, those fluffy flyaways.
Yes.
Think of a blush brush instead of a comb or anything with bristles because that moves the hair. Or a big flat square makeup brush. I might have them to have one in my bag.
Oh my God, I want to see it. It puts all the hairs down.
Yeah, it flattens all the hair. But as a makeup brush, oh my goodness, so you can put liquid anything on it. The hairs are so soft. The only brush endorsed by dermatologists to use if you've had laser. It's like I did on Gok Wan. His words were my favorite. He said it feels like a kimono on your face.
I would just do it on my face just to fall asleep.
And
by
then,
the sounds
I know.
Of it.
And then from that, all it was, I used to have a brush maker making my brushes for me personally, and it was my assistants like Victoria Barron. She said, "Could I have some?" And then a little, like all my little minions came, and I then models started to ask me, so I just started to make them for them. So again, it never ever was meant to be a brand ever.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot of people say, you know, these opportunities, a lot of things that have happened to me have happened to other people. And it's not that I'm a go-getter. I just have anxiety and can't say no. That's the first thing. And second thing, my husband says, there's one thing, I'm not into motivational sayings, but there's one that I live by. Well, I don't live by it, but six on my fridge. It's, what would you do or attempt to do if you knew for sure you could not fail? But the best thing my husband said to me, he said, your biggest successes have been when you've, and he's very clever in business. He said, it's when you have nothing to lose is when you have the most power. When you have nothing to lose. So if you go in there, like, you're not going to get it, you don't want it, that's when you have all the power. And it's so true. It's when you're scared of losing something, that's when the fear just diverts. And I think of all my best makeup work happens when I'm not scared. The fear I carry inside is massive because people say with makeup, don't take it personally. Yes, take it personally because you chose to put that lipstick color. You chose to do, and makeup, you're the first cab off the rank on a set. You're the first thing everyone looks at. Styling and photography, that all comes after.
Yeah.
So, you know, I do have a lot of fear, and I think the anxiety is what's made me successful, not the confidence. How I think about it is, if I have a vision in my mind, say I'm doing your makeup, we're shooting an editorial, I have a vision. My motto, I say this to myself all day on the shoot, if it turns out how I've expected it to, I'm disappointed. The team should take that. And I have seen photographers when I've literally put a bit of Vaseline on an eyelid, they'll take a photo and I'll tear up. Or my, oh my God, it's a piece of art that I want to hang on. They're the days that I just love to work. And sometimes they are the scary people. And the scary people's what I love, because if I can impress the scary people, that's when I feel I've achieved something.
So do you like to sit in that place where you feel challenged?
I hate it, but it's essential.
I was going to say, are you in the moment going, this is fucked?
Yeah.
So you think it's essential.
Yeah, and because you know what? I'm going to be spending more time in New York this year. And if you look at all the top people in the industry, they're all going to be a bit intimidating. And that I've got to be used to that intimidation. I've got to be out, if I want to just keep playing this game, just getting higher and higher in what I do, and I want to turn up and shoot with Peter Lindbergh or, you know, these big, amazing names, I have to have my confidence is an issue. So I have to throw myself into that. Because there's nothing more rewarding when I come home and there's a scary stylist. But I don't. If they're scary and talented, I respect them. If they're scary and not talented, I don't.
And how do you decipher the difference between scary and learning and scary and not learning? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like where pretty people easy. By the work they do. Right, like, okay. You know, if John Galliano, even though he's become, you know, that was awful, he became an asshole. But I remember being backstage at a Dior show and, you know, there's a lot of egos, a lot of scary people, but it's like I can choose a nice, safe world or, and also too, being around the scary people, what I try and do is go, they're the people going to teach me the most. My uncle was a Buddhist, his name was Swami Chidanandu. And I remember him saying to me, he spent 10 years in India and there's a famous photo with Rajneesh and John Lennon and then my uncle's incredible.
Wow.
And I remember him saying to my brother was a drug addict for a long time. And he said to me something. He said, "Don't you think being a Buddhist is really easy in a Buddhist monk? In a Buddhist world. Because you know you're with other Buddhists,
Buddhist
and
it's when you take it out into the
And then he uses that orange theory, which I use all the time. I teach it to my up and coming makeup artists about the orange juice theory. And in Buddhism, they say if you get an orange and you put pressure and you squeeze it, what do you get? You get orange juice. But what happens when I squeeze you? So what I mean by that, my brother was the one person who'd set me off because." Mm. Doing the drug and the lies. And my uncle said to me, he's your guru. He's the one that teaches you the most. So when I'm at Fashion Weeks, I'm around those personalities. I don't mean to call out stylists here, but the stylists are the ones that you love or you're terrified of. It's how I act in front of that. And that's what I'm trying to teach my up and coming kids. It's who you are in front of those people. That's you know, who you are. And you know what? When you're around all the safe, lovey, I sometimes I think, if you're worried more about that, you've got to be doing makeup when you've got to love it that much that you do it when you're not being paid and no one's watching.
Mm.
And that's the problem with the whole Instagram world right now. It's so absorbent of what, how many likes, me.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's an important thing. Look, I wish I could go on and feel secure, but you know what's so amazing? I've spoken to 10 of the world, some of the world's best makeup artists, and they all say the same thing. Most of them think they're not good at what they do.
I think it's important. And
I don't like it, but it's true.
I think for me this year, we got fired pretty brutally. And so then I went for the first 6 months going, I can't be near anybody that reminds me of those awful people.
Yeah.
But at the same time, one of those people that was the most awful in particular and the most manipulative, I don't feel like I've met someone that really got radio like that person either.
Right.
So I was taught a lot.
Yeah.
Which is the real fucked up kind of conundrum you find yourself and where I find myself now of thinking of the kinds of things that we want to do or I want to do in the future and who you surround yourself with, finding that balance of what's actually unhealthy but what's also making you uncomfortable in a healthy way.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's interesting. It's a tricky one. Back to the Dior, behind the scenes, Dior's Galeando, all this kind of stuff. I mean, what was the biggest point or the biggest story you had that would be a show-off story for you to tell someone, in that you learned something, but there was also all of these names, all of this sparkle, all of this incredible, I guess, glitz and glamour of what people think you do?
It's funny, the glitz and glamour. Okay, so
we know for real that it's a lot of it is BS.
Well, the reason I think people, okay, when I say I'm working with a celebrity, like I've worked with Pink, Kelly Rowland, a lot of them, and people always say to me, oh, that's so glamour, it's so amazing. And they're the people I get the most scared of, but it's not the celebrity I'm scared of. This is the thing. When you work with, I mean, I remember when I worked with Alicia Pink first time, about 4 or 5 years ago, and she had just shot with Pat McGrath for MAC like a month before.
Mm-hmm.
So the bigger the celebrity, the more bigger the makeup artists are that they've worked with.
Right.
So when you work with a big celebrity, they're comparing you to the Pat McGraths, the Peter Phillips,
and that,
the
Val Garland. And is that what makes you nervous?
That's the fear.
Because that's where they know what's amazing.
And they've got photographic evidence of what they did. They're going to have photographic evidence of what I did. And they remember you from the images as well. So that's probably when the glitz and glamour, I think that's what people get confused with. The glitz and glamour of that is when they love you and you're comfortable and you can breathe and it's working quite well. That's the part. But then there's been moments. My favourite moment is when Kelly Rowland asked me for my autograph. But technically it was to sign a book, but I'm still calling it an autograph.
No, Kelly Rowland has asked you for your autograph.
Did you or did you not sign your name?
I did, and I said to her, I did sign my name. I think I did it 3 times.
Sign my name,
Because you can sing. That was amazing. And I remember, because all the press were there that day, and I remember asking her, sorry, who was the last person you asked, Kelly? And Steve, you wonder? Oh, okay, great. And that was really an amazing moment.
Well, that's a bloody good dinner party story of theirs, isn't it?
And it's a question about what's my been most favourite moment.
I guess if you were at a dinner party and you were shot.
Coolest moment of your job.
Oh, great. Yeah. Okay, I've got a few of those. All right, so Lady Gaga ordered my brushes.
Fuck yes.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing.
Yes, let's start
looking.
Oh,
yeah.
There was an email. It was like, I want to speak to someone ordering my makeup artist, Sarah Tanner. And my husband thought it was Sarah Tanner, who's an amazing Australian makeup artist who's already got them. So he got confused, was about to delete the email.
So they're emailing you?
Through the website. Okay. And my husband was going to
Lady Gaga's people.
It was from her through the house. We've got the reason I won't, I mean, I'm talking about it, but the reason I'm not going to post, like, we've had orders from the Queen of Guitar. I think, China Vogue put the brushes when I first launched the top two in the world. Harper's Bazaar said they were in the top five in the world. We've had some Peter Phillips, Val Garland.
You can brag about it because it's not your, it doesn't define you. And I always say this, we talk about this a bit and have done on the show with when you talk about race or things that are often a little bit tricky. It's a random example, but stick with me.
Yep.
And it's all about people's intention.
Yeah, so, I always say that. What would they intend to do?
And so when you say all of this stuff, none of it is, you're not defined by it.
Yeah.
So that's why it doesn't come across.
It's nice to have.
Yeah. It's just nice to go through those moments as well of yours.
I think, I think, sorry, I just had two more quick bragging moments while I'm on a roll.
Yeah, bloody go.
Being dyslexic and being a bestseller, like over, like the first time was amazing, then second, then third, and then I have lost count. And then probably the most amazing thing is finding this Japanese master who's doing my brushes, because there's only, in Japan, there's only ever been 40 masters of craft ever awarded, and you can only be, how's it, samurai sword maker, or a calligraphy brush maker, or they call ude brush, F-U-D-E. Hardest brush in the world to make. The Japanese government awards people who are amazing. Start at 70 steps to make a brush. They can go from 10,000 to 100,000 to make a brush. And when my magnetic brushes were being copied, I had to have a drop the mic moment, do something no one else can do. So I started to research and found out there's only two living masters of craft left alive in the world. One man's 108, so he wasn't an option.
And when you say master of craft, you mean making brushes?
Yes.
So they, yeah. So the master of craft is hand making.
He has a family. It's all handmade. So he doesn't personally make them all. He's got a very small family business. And he is the only living master of craft left in the world working. So he's designed my brushes. I'm going to go and do a documentary on him and film the process. I'm the only Westerner, first person outside his own family business to make brushes.
How did you find it?
It was such a hard thing. I was just trying to find something that I could do. First of all, the magnetic function was something new and no one had done it before. But when he got copied, I was like, oh. And the good thing is I was copied by one of the biggest YouTubers in the world. Her name's Pony and she's Korean, and she claimed it was her idea. And I woke up one morning, I'm famous in Korea because a lot of her fans found out the truth, and it was right. Kind of exciting. And my husband, I was like, oh, we can sue because we have this patent. And my husband looked at me and said, do you want to be right or do you want to be rich? And I went, kind of both. But and what he meant by that, and I'm not a very good business person. Some of my brushes, people don't realize. Some I actually lose money when I sell them because it's so expensive to make. I found this a brush curator in Switzerland who she just writes on the world's top brushes, and she'll how they're made, the type of wood. It's Sweet Makeup Temptation. She's amazing.
Hang on, her whole job is discussing and just
yeah. And her brush collection, like she'll buy a brush, $50,000 brush. Her like her lowest end brushes she reviews like Tom Ford, and it's hard to find.
Wow.
And the brushes that I'm making, we've even had interest in the royal families because they're gifts. It's something because people in Japan, they're not writing anymore, so the whole craft's going to be
and
no
it's
longer
such a beautiful,
there. So.
I remember thinking all the time of how much of a beautiful gift the old brush with the mirror was.
Oh,
remember
yeah,
that?
They're yeah. beautiful.
But
yeah.
there is something about a brush. Yeah. I don't relate, but I kind of understand too. So you went. So when your husband said, right or rich,
oh yeah. So we can spend time in court suing, or do you just want to just do something that no one else can copy? And so I had to. How do you do that? So I thought, I'm going to have to somehow claim, I want to find the best brush maker in the world. And that's what we did. It took me 4 years. We went back and forth.
4 years to find this one particular person
to make it.
Well,
back and
to
agree to do it. Because he was all about, which I love, where the translation got mistaken, he's like, I only do calligraphy brushes. I'm like, that's what I want. So to give you an idea, most expensive brush you can buy over the counter in the world today, between 10 to 20 steps. A calligraphy ude brush starts at 72.
And when you say 10 to 20 steps,
from
you
beginning
mean
to end.
The steps in terms of the making it.
Yeah,
okay.
Actually some of them are only 3 steps, but I'm talking high end are from 10 to 20. A calligraphy brush starts at 72. Mine start at 52. So my brush has a calligraphy technology, and what that means is a calligraphy artist picks up a brush with black heavy paint and on one white canvas with adding pressure, lifting and adding pressure, gets one stroke thick, thin, however he wants. He can make the stroke as thin as a hair, thick, and all the edges are blended.
How
so
incredible.
My brushes with minimum strokes blend the edges for you. So you don't have to have this annoying... And I have
like
something
calligraphy.
About, yeah, like calligraphy. Right. It's about precision, half the strokes. And
what
if
you're not talented to have the right precision,
it doesn't
blurs.
Matter.
And the weight, the ergonomic weight is the same as the calligraphy brush. And I sent them to Val Garland, Peter Phillips, all the people I admire, just to see feedback before I release. Even Mario, who's very famous with Kim Kardashian's makeup artist. And they've all said the best brushes they've ever used.
Oh,
so,
my God.
So that's why when some girls ring me and say, I would like to do a review, I'm not that I just don't really rate I know these are the world's best brushes. Like, I don't want someone who doesn't understand the brushes going, I don't like this one because of the shape. Well, I'm sorry, but it's like saying Bentley's not a great car.
Yeah. You know, there's a real sense of knowing that you don't need the approval.
No.
So over that 4 years, and I suppose it's like that, and we've heard that bandied around a little bit this year in particular, that 1,000 hours rule before you can become an expert at something.
Oh, gotcha.
You know, there's all of the, so somebody might be able to see your work and see the glitz and glamour of your life on your Instagram and go, wow.
Yeah.
You know, and I think everybody's obsessed with this overnight success thing. Now online, they're a viral sensation.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen like that.
Never.
Even if it is to the world an overnight success, they've been working for fucking 10 years that you haven't seen.
And the thing is too, when you see Richard Sharer, who was my makeup teacher, he was David Bowie's makeup artist, completely colorblind, died over 10 years ago.
Wow.
He invented the lightning stroke and all that. I remember I was one of his last students and I had to do an eyeliner on a model, and his philosophy was I had to go home, do it 100 times with photographic evidence before I came back to the next lesson 3 days later. And what I loved about what he said, it's something that if you do, and I say this to makeup artists when they're learning, you teach them a lip and they struggle. Once you've done it 100 times, you might, on that same person, you might be okay at it. But then you have to do it on every age group, every texture, every shape possible.
It's with like different skin, weather, trying to do something outside with different climate.
In becoming a great makeup, then doing your own face is sometimes the easiest thing. Because you're not, but even, there's even more to it than that. Like being a makeup for me is about 30 to 40% of it. The rest of it is the human connection, working with someone, understanding the brief, interpreting the, like, and a lot of what I'm worried about, a lot of the new artists that still want to do that fashion thing and work on models, they're missing that part of the element then. And we've seen a few problems, a few successful Instagrammers who've been given shoots and the director hasn't liked it, it's all gone, or they've directed shows and because they haven't worked through that.
And they're also coming up as talent in their own right.
Yeah.
You know, so you come on a shoot and you have become Insta famous from your makeup.
Yeah.
It's like, it's the great example is of like the RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yeah.
Once the show became more successful and then a lot of the drag or the queens ended up being picked from Instagram, then they were put in all these challenges to make their costumes, to do their own makeup, and they were filmed doing it. A lot of them then struggled because they didn't have a filter, they didn't have all this time, they weren't, it was just a different ballpark. And it's, I would imagine it would be like that with a lot of artists that have crafted their own way for a photo on their terms,
their control,
their lighting, and then,
but it doesn't work like that.
And then I love how separate we are now. Like I can walk down the street and I can say she's an Instagram maker. Like you can see them a mile away. You can see the techniques they do. Most of the girls can tend to start to look a bit the same. The heaviness of it.
Kim Kardashian. Oh no, shit.
Old Kardashian.
Well, old school. But you go out sometimes and you see, I'm like, every chick here is a clone of the next person. It's freaky.
And the thing that I have a little giggle to myself, but when they do that heavy powder, matte, then put a fake highlight, but they're putting a highlight, but it's dark inside. So that shine on the tip of the nose would never be there. So it looks even more fake. And it's like when you're trying to,
your nose is sweaty.
Yeah, it's just
not right.
It concerns me that, you know, that there's such, if you want to be a makeup artist, there is, I know people say, we're just angry because I'm not angry at all. I'm kind of loving the fact we're very, very separate. Mm. But when I have clients now, though, like if I have a special event or red carpet, I need to look at what they're looking at, what inspires them.
Yeah.
Because the set makeup's very separate, which is a good thing, because if you want to work for Vogue and Harper's and do that editorial runway red carpet stuff, there's a very different aesthetic. And so it's easy to say what family you belong into. And we just sort of do our own thing and it's great.
I want to ask you about this sitting in the different roles of being the student and the teacher.
Yeah.
Because Jazz Pampling, who does our brows, who I saw a few days ago, and she's obsessed with you, and she was like, tell her I say hi. And I said, any tips, what should I ask Ray about? We're getting her in, blah, blah, blah. And she said, ask her about being the way that she teaches. She's like, she gives away everything.
Yeah.
So that anybody, any I'm not saying any Joe Blow could do it, but she said a lot of people, generous. Hold a lot of their secrets to their chest because there's this fear around, if I give away my secrets, somebody could emulate. And she said she gives away everything, but nobody has ever come close. And I find...
That's a lovely compliment.
Yeah, but I find...
I don't think that, but that's lovely.
I find this interesting in that so much of what you... I'm gathering from this chat that we've had, you like to sit in that student.
Yeah.
You know, and that I don't want to be the best. I want to keep curious, keep learning, keep being challenged constantly.
Yeah. Because I think the other thing too, the reason I teach everything was actually what Richard Sharer taught me. He's one of the greatest makeup artists in the world. And the first thing he said, you teach all your secrets because it forces you to learn new ones. I've had so many assistants, like, for example, Joel, Leigh Tai, Victoria Barron. These guys were assisted, Victoria Barron's done incredibly. But I've had like 50 others as well, and they haven't. So it's not, you can teach some, it's like saying that you're going to do a painting class with Picasso. Will that make you Picasso? No.
Yeah.
So it's not a risk that if you teach them everything, they're not going to be able to do what you do because it is, can you do it on a Sudanese skin, on someone with menopause or something? There's just so much more to makeup than... this is how I explain it to people who want to do editorial makeup. They decide they're going to be a makeup artist, so they want to be an editorial one.
Yeah.
What you're saying is you want to be in the top 5%, like the people that get to do the red carpet, the Cannes, the Vogues, whatever. So basically the same thing as like today, I want to learn how to play tennis, but I only want to play for Wimbledon. That's kind of what you're saying.
Okay.
So there's a lot involved.
But it's interesting that it goes back to that, like, and it's funny that you go, I'm an anxious person and I, you know, self-doubt. But there's this real lovely, sense of like self-confidence that I get from you when you say, you know, even when you're telling your stories before, you're like, well, this doesn't define me or I don't need to be rich because I don't need somebody to review my brushes and tell me they're the best in the world.
Yeah.
They are.
Yeah.
It's a fact.
And so
you can tell, you can teach all of your secrets and give them all away 1,000 times over, but you're not going to be Ray Morris because I'm Ray Morris.
Yeah. But it's funny, but when Evans even says my name like that, I still look over my shoulder. I shouldn't turn open the mic. Who people are talking about. When people introduce me, even when they say author, I'm like, I'm not a failed school. It doesn't, maybe that's probably why I don't.
I think so.
Yeah.
And you identify as the student still, you know.
Totally.
So if we were to wrap up on, I suppose, 3 points that has helped attribute to that confidence that Merce has spoken about, what would that be for our listener to work on for themselves?
I would say... that's back to that saying, what would you do or attempt to do if you knew for sure you could not fail?
That's a goodie.
That's a really a good one. And with makeup, would you do it if no one was watching and you weren't being paid? Because that's where passion comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for my job, it is perseverance. It's something that, okay, if I want to talk about makeup, one thing I think is really important, only look at the world's best artists because I think you become what you look at. So if you want to say be a makeup artist, look at your Italian Vogues, your French Vogues, plug into the references, plug into the where something was born, plug into that source because you'll only become a better artist. And don't be a wanker.
Mm. Yeah, don't that's a good one.
Be nice because people...
Whatever industry.
It's how, you know what I always say? It's not how who I think I am. It's I have to worry about what other people think I am. So it's important.
Oh, I did a good quote about this. Did
you? Yeah, you put that on Instagram. Yeah. I read it about 58 times because I was like... I am the what?
Okay, so
what is it?
It's by Thomas Cooley.
Just go slowly. Go slowly, babe.
I am not who you think I am. I am not who I think I am. I am who I think you think I am.
That is it in a nutshell. I need that is perfection.
Oh well, there you go.
Wow,
yeah. I'm going to repost that.
That's interesting. Literally wrote it on a post.
So amazing.
I was trying to get creative.
Love it, Ray
Morris. It has been so delightful.
Oh my god, we could sit here for another 85 years.
Legitimately.
And I am the timekeeper, and I didn't want to be at all.
It's gone way over.
Oh wow, okay.
It's ridiculous. It's just been so delightful. So we'll have to do it again.
Part two for sure.
And we have to work together.
Oh please.
Oh, I've got all these. What can we do?
Oh, let's have a play day.
It'd be so fun. But thank you so much for your time. Congrats.
Thank you.
If you want to continue the conversation with us, we are never off our phones. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, or perhaps head to the website for a stack of articles, different content, all kinds of interviews at thethinkergirls.com.au.
This podcast is presented by the Thinker Girls, Stacey June and Christy Mercer. This podcast is produced by me, Christy Mercer, and edited by our podcast producer, Jordan Lott.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.